Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
Hi, I'm Megan Segura.
And I'm Eric J. Mack.
And this is The Daily Dish, Bravo's official podcast.
Bravo and E! Are continuing our conversations to amplify Black voices every Monday in June on Instagram Live. This week, E!'s Daily Pop host, Justin Sylvester, spoke with Cynthia Bailey, Dr. Jackie Walters, and Elaine Welteroth. Cynthia described the understood silent racism she's experienced as a model in the fashion industry, and she had a powerful message to haters and trolls still questioning the importance of saying Black Lives Matter. Dr. Jackie reacted to the recent death of Rayshard Brooks in Atlanta and explained how we can all vote safely and protect ourselves against COVID-19. Plus, Elaine Welteroth described her experience growing up in a biracial family and shared details about the 15% pledge, which is demanding retailers dedicate 15% of their shelf space to Black-owned businesses. Let's take a listen.
You know, we talked about, you know, when COVID hit, we were both really hesitant. We wanted to hang out, but we couldn't hang out. But what was so amazing was to see you get over the fear of COVID and get out and march with Mike and Noelle and your daughters. What was that experience like, and why did you decide to break the lockdown?
Right, well, we were really, you know, careful and conscious, COVID conscious, pretty much the whole time. But when everything happened with George Floyd, it was just like just really depressing and hard to just stay in the house and just watch all this on the news. I felt like we really needed to, I felt like it was worth us going out there to support this cause. And it was like, for me, you know, just watching everything that he went through was like, I didn't feel like we had a choice. And our kids were like, you know, our kids, they're a different generation. They're very woke. Yeah, they're like, look, we need to be out there on the front lines, just showing our support in any way that we can. And we wanted to share that experience with them and just make sure they were safe. Because honestly, watching everything on the news, I didn't know what was a safe protest, what wasn't a safe protest. It seemed like, you know, the tensions were really high with the police and everything. So I didn't want them to get, you know, hurt or anything. Just getting out the house, number one, felt great, and getting out the house for such a great cause as, you know, just, you know, being a part of, you know, a peaceful protest was amazing. I felt like we didn't have a choice. We had been stuck in the house forever, and if we were going to go, that was the time to go. Yeah.
So look, you are no stranger to headlines, to magazine covers, honey. We've had a Vogue, we've had a Glamour, we've had an Elle, we've had a Vanity Fair, we've had two we have been in the pages of very many a magazine. When we talk about diversity and inclusion in fashion, where do you think we stand right now in 2020?
We got a lot of work to do in 2020 because, you know, I started in the industry when I was 18 years old. I'm 53 years old now. It was a very different world back then. I mean, I literally signed with Wilhelmina Models in New York, and it was maybe 3 Black people signed with that agency, and probably 300 white people that were signed with it. And, you know, it was very common to go to try to get with different agencies back then, and they would just pretty much tell you, sorry, we already have 2 Black girls. And I would always wonder, oh,
wait, yeah. They felt easy.
They felt very comfortable saying, sorry, we already have a Black girl. And literally they would have at the most maybe 2 or 3. And it would be like, again, hundreds of white models. And so, you know, that was always, you know, the fashion industry has always been racist in terms of that. You know what I'm saying? My first cover was for the cover of Essence magazine. I went to see the Vogues and all those people millions of times, but was never good enough for whatever reason to ever be in those magazines. And I felt like I had, you know, everything it took. I looked as good as some of the white girls that were booking some of those things. But, you know, during that time, it was just kind of like you just knew that, you know, if they took Naomi, they weren't going to take anybody else. If they took Tyra for that week, they weren't going to take anyone else. And it was just really a understood silent racism that nobody really talked about.
Wow. I have a question. Like, I wonder, like, you know, when you talk to the Beverly Johnsons, when you talk to Tyra back in the day, were they feeling as frustrated as you were being on the front lines trying to kick those doors down?
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, I can't speak for them, but, you know, I've worked with Beverly. Beverly Johnson was actually, I just spoke to her the other day. She was actually my modeling mentor, and Tyra and I definitely worked together. And, you know, we were always, you know, there's woke, and then there's woke for back then, which wasn't as woke, because, you know, you got to realize, like, you know, they were the first to even, you know, break down those doors for the few Black people to come through those doors that did go through. So it's, you know, it's a tricky spot when you're the first. If you're on the cover of Vogue, but they don't let anybody else Black on there for years and years and years, it puts you in a situation where it's like, okay, well, I got through the door. You want to bring other people through, but we're just so happy somebody got through. Like, I was happy that Tyra got it or Naomi got it. And, you know, I just kind of had to look at it like, well, I guess no one else is going to get it for a while because they've given it to these two. And it was never a situation where a sense of like, hey, you know what? It doesn't matter what color you are. Whoever they think is right for this fashion issue or this fashion cover should just get it. But it, you know, it was always really about like, okay, I guess we haven't used the Black girl in 10 years. We should probably put one on the cover. And it goes from the fashion shows to the magazines to the catalogs for all of it. I was always the one Black girl that worked for quite a few of my clients that I worked with for years.
Wow. So it's so crazy because you talk about woke for back then and woke for now. It seems like this generation is having an easier time asking for inclusion, asking for diversity, demanding that we see more colored models on the runway.
Yep.
How hard was it back then to speak out? And what would happen if you were the model who spoke out?
Oh, well, it was very hard because you didn't really have any real support. You know, we didn't really have a group of Black people that was in the industry that would like stand together and say, hey, we want this. We want more inclusion and, you know, all these different things when it comes to the fashion industry. And so when you don't have like the support, you know, you're just out there by yourself asking for these things. It's very difficult, A, to get anything accomplished because, you know, no one's going to listen just to Cynthia Bailey, but they'll listen to Cynthia and Tyra and Naomi and, you know, all these other people. They'll listen to all of us together. But without us being unified and coming as a collective group, we didn't really have any real power to be honest. And that's just what it is, Justin. I mean, it's sad, but it's true. You know, I grew up in Alabama, so I've always kind of been around racism to some degree. And you know, I've been the only Black in many rooms my whole life. And I had to be grateful to be invited to those rooms and not really push, but, you know, rock the boat too much and say, hey, you know, I'm in here, but like, I got like 30 other, you know, my Black sisters I'm trying to get in here. You know, it's kind of like, let me get in here first, fill it out, and we'll slowly bring one or two of y'all in. You know, you're in the same room.
I know how it goes. I know that, like, and I will say this, 50% of it is, that's how the culture is. And 50% of it is, that's what we have been told as children, that when you get in a room, you walk in with your head down, don't make any noise, and be grateful that you were allowed in this room, because 10 years ago, 20 years ago, we weren't here.
Right. We can't even be in the room. So now that we're finally, there's one or two of us in the room, you know, we do have a certain responsibility to try to make change, but it's hard to do it by yourself. Like, two people can't change that much. You know what I mean? So this is what's so amazing. Okay. This is what's so amazing about what's happening now. You know, what's happening now is, you know, people are just coming together. People are just coming together on, you know, just on the, just for the sake of righteousness, whatever's just right in this world at this point. And it's such an amazing time. And I feel so blessed to be alive to see all this change that's happening, where the whole world, not just the United States, you know, the whole world is coming together.
No, 100%. And I've said this time and again, the reason why it's working right now is because it's not only Black people saying that we need to change things, and this is happening in America. It's white people, it's people of other nationalities that are coming out and standing with us. And I thank them all the time that, yeah, Martin Luther did it, but he did it with a very few allies and
right.
a lot of black people. But in 2020, with social media, with everything going on, you should be able to speak up and help and bring awareness, even if you're not black, even if you don't have a platform.
Exactly. That's right. It's true. It's a different time. It's a different time. And I'm excited to use my blackness and just everything that I have that I can put out into the world to help, you know, uplift our race and just people, because I just think everybody deserves a fair shot. You know what I'm saying? It's like, if you're not qualified for a job, you're not qualified for the job, but it shouldn't be because of your skin color.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, let's just level the playing field and just let everybody, like, you know, go for it and try to be great. Like, it's so hard to, you know, as much success as I've had in my life, I've always had to feel lucky and blessed to be the first Black to get a Seagram's partnership or whatever it is I'm doing. Like, everything I've done, everything that I've accomplished, it's always been under that, like, well, you know, you're on a Black show. It's so great that you are able to be on television, you know, as a Black woman. You know what I mean? Like, we have to be grateful for everything that we have, when, you know, non-white people, the sky's the limit. For us, any little, you know, chicken wing we get, we got to be like, oh my God, thank you. You know, we got to treat it like a turkey, because we're just so happy to have the opportunity to do anything.
And, you know, it's so funny, because, like, whenever I look at, and not funny, it's, I now understand what the Bailey Agency is and why it is what it is, because you had to deal with being one of two or one of three Black women on a board of 100. And now you get to open this agency up and show people that Black is beautiful. And it's not just going to be three. It's going to be the 300, you know, diverse sizes and shapes. What's it like knowing that you are making people's dreams come true and opening doors for people because they were slammed in their face?
It's incredible. It's the one great thing that came out of me, you know, having a successful modeling career for all these years, to be able to create a platform for people that I don't have to discriminate against, and can open up my doors to anybody that wants to learn about the industry, about the business, and to inspire them and to motivate them. And if it's not modeling that, you know, that they are going to be great at, then, you know, I can, you know, also introduce them to acting and what that looks like. You know, it's, again, it's just always been such a white industry. And I think, you know, I'm grateful to have had, like, to at least have a small platform such as the Bailey Agency School of Fashion to at least, you know, change some people's lives. And we have quite a few success stories. And I can honestly say, had those kids not come to me, I don't think they would have ever gotten in the industry, because they, you know, they probably would have had the door shut in their face. To be honest, they would have never been given the opportunity to even get any kind of real career off the ground, to even get any proper training.
No, for sure. And I want to be honest, and I want to be open. And again, this is a discussion. Everyone out there, when we say a white industry or a white space, we mean predominantly white, and that it's run predominantly white people. And
right.
It's that we're not pointing out that only white people are in the mix. We're just saying
right.
predominantly.
Exactly. Exactly. That's correct.
As a mother of someone in the LGBTQ community, how does it make you feel that people are having a hard time accepting and bringing forth light that people of trans identity are being killed and no one is paying attention to them? Like, how does that feel knowing that your daughter is a part of the LGBTQ community? People could potentially not pay attention to her because she's bisexual or gender nonconforming.
Oh, yeah. You know what? It's heartbreaking, honestly. You know, Noelle came out last year, I think, maybe about a year and a half ago. And honestly, of all the things that I've shown on The Real Housewives of Atlanta, that probably was one of my proudest moments, because I knew that if it took what it took for my child to come out and talk about being gay openly, I can't imagine all the other kids out there that felt afraid to talk to their parents about it. And I knew that, you know, well, I know for a fact that parents that watched that episode felt very comfortable having those conversations with their kids that were fluid or gay or whatever, you know, whatever, however they define themselves, after watching Noel and I just talk about it and me accept it. Like, I really feel like at the end of the day, we have to get to a place where really all lives really have to matter. Trans, gay, whatever. And even though Noel got a lot of support and love from that episode, she got a lot of hate as well, which really broke my heart, because she had people trolling her. She actually had to get off social media for a little bit because people were trolling her saying, "You're going to hell," you know, like bashing her. And she wasn't ready. She didn't know how to deal with that. And I didn't know how to help her with that other than, you know, tell her to just don't worry about it. You know, forget what they're saying on social media. Take a social media break, you know, and trying to tell her, 20-year-old to get off social media. They're like, that's my life. How am I gonna get off social media? But you know what I mean?
Yeah. So
it's heartbreaking. It's really heartbreaking, and it's just not right. And that's something that definitely has to change. The world just has to do better. And I think we have hit the one thing that COVID did was it set everybody down. It set everybody in the world down, and God got everybody's attention. And
100%.
We're in a place spiritually now where we have the chance to really be present and pay attention to what's going on in the world. We don't have to get up and go to work. We're at home. So, you know, you're watching the news or you're on social media. You're woke. You see this stuff. It's in your face. So you can't pretend like you're somewhere on a business trip. You see this. You can't ignore it. It's all in your face.
You can no longer use the words, "I had no idea."
I didn't know it was like that. Like, even us talking to our kids about police brutality. You know, all our kids drive. Every time they drive off somewhere, we have to, like, explain to them how to be pulled over by a police officer because, you know, different generation. They're going to ask questions. "Excuse me, why are you pulling me over? What did I do?" Whatever. Me, I'm just, like, literally going to just, like, just put my hands up. I don't even want to even have a conversation with a police officer. I just want to be safe. Like, I was kind of raised to, you know, you don't ask questions. You don't, like, give them any kind of resistance. But our kids, they're not from that school. They want to know why you pulled them over, and they want to film you. They don't want to get out the car. And you can easily, as we know too well, that could be a matter of life and death, just having that.
You know I'm a pop off. You know I'm the type to be like, you know what's happening?
Because
looking at, you know, and I'm going to be honest, I'm looking at George Floyd sit there and be so pleading for his life and scared. I can see myself.
Absolutely.
Not only sitting there scared out of my mind, but trying my hardest to fight back to save my own life, not calm, because I know I was taught the police, this is what happens to Black men when you're one-on-one with a police officer. This could happen to you. This is real life. And you know my gay ass would be like, what? You know I would pop up. So,
oh, for sure. And honestly, as a parent, this was the first time after I saw that I was really grateful. And my heart really goes out to anyone with Black sons. I was so glad we have Black daughters. And even then, it could happen to them. But I don't think I would get any sleep if I had a Black son out here driving around going anywhere. I think I would be worried to death, like all the time, honestly. Like it really, truly, like, you know, is a blessing that, like, that's at least I look at our kids, I'm like, oh my God, thank God they're not black boys, because that just takes a little bit of the pressure off. Not that some of the same, you know, things can happen to them, but I just feel like it's a higher percentage if it's a black boy. And that really breaks my heart to these moms out there that's raising these young little black boys. And what is that conversation like? How do they prepare them to go out into the streets and into the world? You know, and it's like they even just to go, they could get pulled over going to church and something could pop off. You know what I'm saying?
No, 100%. And look, I want to take this moment really quickly, because I know you talked about people being rude in Noelle's comments. There are people in these comments that are saying things that are ignorant, that are you know, gay bashing, that are racist. I want to thank those people, because what they don't realize is when you say hateful things and you hateful comments, it gives other people the courage to stand up in solidarity for people like myself, for Noelle, for Cynthia.
Right. So
thank you for activating people's activism with your nasty, rude comments.
I agree. I deal with it all the time as a reality star. And you know what it is? It's like, unfortunately, it's necessary to have hate to bring out love.
Thank you.
It's necessary. So along with Justin, I thank all the haters. Please keep on hating if that's what you want to do, because for all the haters out there, there's like plenty of people that's going to love, and love is always going to beat out hate. Light is always going to beat out darkness. So if you want to be a hater and be dark and hateful, you sit right over there and keep trolling and get your trolling life. And if you troll too hard on my line, I'm on Bravo line today, but if you come on the Cynthia Bailey 10 line, you will get blocked, because it is a no hate zone. Mm-hmm. Are you kidding me? With everything that's going on in the world, like, anyone that even has the audacity to even come at two black people trying to have an intelligent conversation about Black Lives Mattering, and them actually still come up with a reason to troll, it's like, get the hell out of here.
And that's the thing. And I don't think there's one of two things. One, maybe you are just a racist and it's, you know, you live a very dark and terrible life. I get that. And I, like, you know what, if that's your thing, you're going to have to answer to somebody at the end of your days, and it ain't, I'm going to let him deal with that.
Hey.
And the other thing is, if you are upset by us saying Black Lives Matter or all Black Lives Matter, that means that you are feeling defensive and that
Absolutely.
You feel guilty about something. So you have to get on the defense.
Absolutely.
Not us pointing a finger at anybody. This is us speaking up and asking for your help, because now is the time that we can really change the world.
That we have a voice now. Our voice is finally being heard. And be clear, we're not saying other lives don't matter. We're just saying Black lives matter too. That's it. Like, nobody's saying that other lives don't matter. All lives matter, but be clear, Black lives matter.
100%. And by the way, we're trying to save the black rhino in Africa. So if we're trying to save that of James with 59 cents a month that I'm giving to the black rhino up in Africa,
right.
Save this endangered species here. Black men are being hunted on a daily basis.
Exactly.
Because we have a camera crew with everybody having cell phones.
Right, exactly. And you know what really makes me crazy? Can you imagine, Justin, like, if we see all the craziness and the hurt that's going on in the world that's being filmed on cameras. What the hell is happening in the world, especially in terms of, like, what's happening with police brutality? What if we don't get to see when somebody doesn't have a camera handy? God only knows what's happening when it's not being filmed, because when I tell you, when that police officer was kneeling on George Floyd's neck, and saw people filming him and still didn't care. The fact, I was like, well, what would this man do to man if he wasn't being filmed? Because he was not bothered. And I was like, this is the coldest, most evil thing I think I've ever sat and watched.
Thank you. That is exactly what we are talking about. And I will say, not all cops are bad cops. Just all black people are bad people. Just like not all protesters are looters. But I'll be damned if I'm going to watch my friend, co-worker, kneel on somebody's neck for 8 minutes federal.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's where the issue comes into it.
That's the issue, because here's, at the end of the day, the read is a good cop that watches a bad cop do bad things to other people is a bad cop as well. That part. A good cop is a bad cop if they are going to stand by and watch the bad cop be bad. So,
Cynthia, you know what? We're going to leave it at that.
We're going to leave it right there.
Right there. And you know what? We're going to continue this conversation. I want to say thank you for joining us. We truly appreciate it. And, you know, I'm going to catch you on the flip side. You know, I'm going to call you after all this is done.
Oh, no, for sure. And I appreciate you doing this, Justin. I've seen you out there on the front line. You have been protesting your butt off here in Los Angeles. And I commend everything that you're doing. I applaud you, my brother. You know, we are in an industry together where, you know, we're still making strides. And, you know, again, it's always been that mentality for years. We should just be grateful to be here. And yes, that's just got to change because, you know, at the end of the day, if we're willing to work hard and you know, be qualified to be here, then we should be here regardless of what the color of our skin is.
I love you. And thank you for amplifying your voice. We appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. Anytime.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside. Repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Let me get Dr. Jackie on the phone real quick. Hello.
Hey.
How's it going?
Life is wonderful. Work today, just getting off work.
How crazy is it right now at the hospital?
You know what? I think we're becoming a little bit more adjusted to the new norm, and that's what we're calling it, where we have family members, we have patients with only one family member, and everybody's tested at the door, even the doctors. We do a temperature check, so we're adjusting to it.
Wow. I saw healthcare workers hit the streets, and it is unbelievable to see, you know, your colleagues get out there, you know, white coat, Black Lives Matters. How did it make you feel to see, you know, people on the front lines protesting with everyone else?
Justin, I was so proud to say that I'm a doctor. To see my sisters and brothers in the white coats stand, take a knee, put a hand up for Black Lives Matter reminded us we're not fighting one disease, but we're fighting two. And we're certainly on the front line fighting for COVID every day. You know, I still see patients in the office diagnosed with COVID-19. So we fight COVID by day. And to see my sisters and brothers standing there fighting for COVID by night, I was so amazed. I mean, it was that, you know, that feeling you get that you see. I was so impacted to see that. And, you know, the one thing we know as physicians, when you open a body, everybody's got red blood and a four-chamber heart.
Everybody.
So there's no difference on the inside. So why are we making a difference on the outside?
You know, it's so crazy that you say that. And it seems so simple. But why do you think people cannot get it and can't understand it and can't wrap their heads around it?
I think it's so ingrained in people. I mean, you're not born racist.
No.
That's a learned behavior. You learn that along the way or from home or wherever you get that. And I don't think people get it. But I think what has happened now,
Yes.
Oh my God. And yeah, you know, when I saw something that said to George Floyd, rest in power, that he didn't die in vain, that he's made such a big difference that you cannot be anywhere in this world, not even on Mars or Jupiter, and not understand that Black Lives Matter also.
Yeah.
And so I am so excited. My niece goes to the University of Mississippi Medical School where I went to. And I actually had two nieces to attend there. And one is finishing medical school now. To see a picture of those Black students standing there with I can't breathe and saying Black Lives Matter, I had tears. I had tears. I'm like, I can't believe this is happening. Because I remember my first undergrad there in med tech. There were seven Black kids, or seven Black students in 114. And as we do, we all kind of congregated together. Hey, my name is Jackie. And we all went to the front of the class. We took the front row. And the professor came in, he looked around, and he said, if there's somebody in this room who can't see well or can't hear well or see, come to the front. One of these guys don't mind getting up. And you're like, what? And that was 25, 30 years ago. And to see them stand in solidarity and say, Black Lives Matter, my heart, oh my goodness. I am so excited that it has even spread it into me. I'm from Mississippi. So I'm like, it is hitting the sip now. Okay?
Which is a big deal. Yes. It is a big deal.
Oh my God.
You know, it's so funny because I think a lot of times people, Americans, like to say out of sight, out of mind. It didn't happen here, so it ain't never going to happen here. You live in Atlanta where Rayshard Brooks was gunned down at a Wendy's. What's it feel like having something that monumental happen in your own backyard?
I was in total disbelief. I could not believe this was happening again, especially right here in Atlanta, where we've done so much protesting to say, okay, Black Lives Matter also. To see that happen and to think, you know, in medicine, we always think there's no one way to do it.
Yes.
There are multiple ways to do it. And to see that happen, you know, like, okay, could we have done this? And I don't know how police are trained.
Yeah.
But in medicine, we're trained, if we're thrown a curve, you got to be ready to go over here. You got to save a patient, you know? We don't have one way to save a patient. And so to see that happening right here in Atlanta, I was appalled.
It was shocking to see this happen in Atlanta.
Total disbelief. And I don't know whether police do it, but we would get together and we have M&M rounds and we talk about how you could do something better, how you could do something different. And so that I'm thinking, we just watched George Floyd die. And I thought every police department in this world would say, there's a better way to do it. Do it this way, but save a life.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I put in the comments, if you're not shocked, you're not woke. I agree with that. Because if this does not shock you, if this does not make you stand up or the hairs behind your neck stand at attention, there's something wrong.
Absolutely. And there's a lot wrong. We know that now. What is so shocking to me, though, is to have colleagues and friends who didn't know. You know, who's saying, I didn't know all this was happening. And you're thinking, where have you been? So, yeah.
But now you cannot stand under the guise that you didn't know. Just like when the women's movement happened and Me Too happened. After that, you're not making an off-color comment to a woman at work. You're not putting your hand where it's not supposed to go to a woman at work. You're not, you know, advancing on someone at work because you think that you have the right to, because after the meet, we're not having that.
So let me shout out this generation, though. Oh, my God. We've been saying, like, oh, millennials, oh, Gen X, what are they? Honey, oh, my God. They're not us. And you've seen the thing. We are not our ancestors. And they can certainly say we are not our mamas. We are not our aunts. Oh, my God. And they, you know what? They take me back to the Martin Luther King era.
Like, we're going to die for right. If it takes, you know, we're going to stand for right. We're going to do whatever we need to do. We're going to get your attention 100%. Because this is wrong, and we're not going to accept it anymore.
100%. I'm going to apologize to Gen X because all they do is play on their goddamn phones, and they want to start startups, and they do X, Y, and Z. To the most organized and most peaceful protest the other day, and when I asked to speak to the officer, it was a 26-year-old white girl, and I was like, first of all, hands down to you and your friends, there are hand sanitizing stations back here, but the fact that the
yes,
we really believe that the next generation that comes after them won't have an opportunity to even think about racism because they're changing it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm so excited, and I'm like you. I owe them an apology. So for every person I've said, what are you going to do? What are they're going to mess up our future. No, 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 no. We can never say that again.
They are coming through. I'm so happy to have you here because a lot of times we talk about early voting and getting polls. And a lot of people who are nervous to get to the polls because of coronavirus. Can you?
Now, and that's a good
on how people can ease their minds or how are ways to avoid getting the virus while going to the voting booth.
Let's talk about one thing, Justin. COVID is still here.
Yes.
Okay. A lot of people are walking around like, oh, it was the pandemic and it's gone. It is not. The numbers are actually increasing instead of decreasing in a lot of states. So let's start with the fact that COVID-19 is still here. And to vote, you know, I'm encouraging, you need to ignite the change we need to see with your votes. So don't let anything scare you about voting. Do what we're doing. Wear your mask. Go into those voting polls wearing your mask. And if you're really nervous about it, put some gloves on. Yeah. You know, take your gloves. Take a couple of extra bottles of hand sanitizer. So if you have to stand in the line 5 hours like we had to do in Atlanta,
ooh,
you know, yeah, well, I didn't have to do it, thank God, because I got off work and eased in when everybody was done. But there were people here who stood in line all day long. If it takes standing in line all day, do that. But social distancing, and they had it paced off 6 feet apart, wear your mask. Those are the one thing you can do is wear your mask and social distance, but go to the poll. And if you're really, really scared, get an absentee ballot.
Amen.
But don't vote. There's no reason.
If you're waiting in the line for an hour to get into a club, and you're going to wait for 2 hours to go see Beyonce, and you're going to stand on your feet for 9 hours to go to Coachella, your ass can get your ass to the polling booth.
Look, if you're going to sit in a hair salon for 2 hours.
A walk.
Yes. Yes. You standing there, get your nails done. There are so many reasons we need to get out and vote right now that we don't need to let COVID-19. And I tell my Gen X and millennial employees, oh, I noticed you were on a yacht, on a boat without a mask. So no reason not to go vote.
And by the way, when you go vote, you get off of work. You ain't got no ifs, ands, or buts.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, go, please don't let COVID-19 stop you from voting.
Oh, my God. Dr. Jackie, I love you. Thank you for this discussion.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Ms. Walter Roth, hello.
Hello. How are you?
Look, first of all, congratulations. I heard you got married.
I did. Thank you. I remember when you first interviewed me, you guys were trying to, you guys were asking me about if I was going to wear a wedding dress designed by a Project Runway designer. Do you remember that?
Yes.
I was like, oh, you guys just put me on the spot right now. Let me think about that. But I ended up wearing something I already own because it was a coronavirus wedding and we got married on our stoop and that was the name of the game. So anyway, thank you very much. It's so nice to see you again.
It's so good to see you too. Look, I don't understand, and a lot of times people have this thing where they think, you know, this colorism, light-skinned people don't go through racism, and you grew up in an interracial family.
Yes, I did.
How did you deal with racism growing up as a kid?
Oh, wow. Where do we begin? Well, I grew up in a small town in Northern California, a predominantly white neighborhood. There was some diversity, but certainly not many Black children and even fewer, you know, even fewer biracial kids. I have a Black mother who is a very proud Black woman, a gospel singing Black woman. We grew up in the Black church. And my dad is this hippie freestyle, guitar playing, rock music loving white man. And so I came from a really eclectic family, and there was so much love in our household. And there was also frank conversations about race. And my parents never shied away from those conversations. And they, while they really did embrace our individuality and however we wanted to express ourselves, they were both very clear from the time that we were born. And in fact, they had a conversation before we were born about how they were going to handle conversations about racial identity. And they agreed before we were born that we were going to be raised as Black kids, because that is how America will treat us and see us. And so while we are obviously, you know, very proud of where we come from and all of our heritage, it was important for them that we centered Blackness and celebrated Black culture in our household, because they knew what we would be up against out in the world. And, you know, we dealt with, you know, different grades of racism in my childhood from, you know, I think I would say my brother experienced it more directly and overtly. I mean, he's had multiple instances at school where he was called the N-word. And what's fascinating is, you know, anytime my brother was in trouble, without fail, they would call my mother, except for the times that my brother was called the N-word. Those were the times that the principal's office would call my father.
Because they didn't want to have to deal with your mother.
They, I think, assumed they would get maybe a more sympathetic, you know, they would be met with a little bit more of a sympathetic response. And my father was not the one. And he would come and he used his white male privilege to empower his Black family in this community. And in these moments, he would come into the principal's office and go toe to toe with him and tell him that, you know, what my brother was experiencing was racism. And let's call it what it is. And you're not sending my son home for something when he was defending himself from racist slurs. We need to call that child into the office and talk about what this is like. So I felt like I felt very equipped with the ability to call things as I see them and to stand up for myself. And at the same time, as a kid, you never want to be different. You never want to be different. You just want to fit in. And so I went through my stages of wanting to straighten my hair for picture day and for prom, for any day that I wanted to feel beautiful or feel like it was a special day. I felt like I needed to straighten my hair and shrink a part of myself to fit in. And it took a long time for me to embrace, my natural texture and the beauty of that. And I'm so grateful that I had a Black mother role model. I will say that, she's really saved me from a lot of identity crises, I think, over time. I mean, the one next story I'll give you is in terms of answering your question, because sometimes people think about racism in Black and white, and a lot of times what we experience is some gray area in between, the nuance, the microaggressions, right? It's the subtle things that are hard to talk about, hard to pinpoint, but that certainly have a deep, deep impact on our psyche and our sense of safety and our sense of belonging. And so my very first memory in life is tied to this issue of a microaggression or being othered. I remember I was 3 years old, I was in preschool, and I didn't even know the difference between Black and white. I hadn't really been introduced to the concept of race or skin color yet until this moment where I was asked to, the whole class was asked to make a family collage. And they gave us all these magazines. I love magazines, I love collages. So I go into the magazines and I'm noticing everyone around me is cutting out people. They're on their way. And I'm like, wait a minute. There's no one in these magazines that looks like me or my mom or my brother.
That is your first?
That's my first memory in life. And so what I did in that moment was, first of all, I froze because there was this instant reckoning that, oh, this recognition that I was different and perhaps less than or wrong, or something was wrong with me, that I didn't look like any of the kids in my class and no one in the magazines. And so I decided in that moment to make a split second decision. I looked around and I was like, okay, I'm just gonna do what everyone else is doing. And I made a white paper family. I cut out white people. And I came home with my white paper family collage, and my mom took one look at that and she said, Houston, we have a problem. We need to sit down. And she made sure that that new and improved version of our family was represented on my wall, my bedroom wall, every morning and every night. It was the first and last thing I saw. And she wanted to reinforce this idea that no matter what media is showing you, this is what you are, and you are to be proud of this. And, you know, so I remember my course correcting in those moments, and it was so necessary. And so many families don't have to think about discrimination and the lack of representation and how, you know, white supremacy shows up every day in all of these minute ways that really do filter into a child's psyche and make them feel like they're not good enough. So I'm happy that we're cracking open these conversations that Black folks been having forever. We're just now able to have them in public and on platforms like this on Bravo between the two of us. So it's a new day, and I actually hope that it is a new day. I will say that
100%. And it's so funny because I'm like, why are people acting like, and companies acting like Black people just came out, like we the new iPhone 12S. We have been here. They're acting like we just came out and they need to talk to Steve Jobs about how to handle it, how to reprogram themselves. If you only had 3 shades of Black makeup, shame on you, skincare company. If you've never had a product line that was geared towards Black people, shame on you, beauty company, because we have been here. It's just crazy. You know what I loved about you, and I became a fan of yours when you went to Teen Vogue, and there was this insurgence of diverse stories and models and writers and all of these unbelievable depictions of different, you know, races. How hard was it for you to implement that at Teen Vogue, where it's such like a predominantly white space?
Well, it was a responsibility. It was, you know, I when I was 25, I became the first ever Black beauty director at a Condé Nast magazine, which was at Teen Vogue. And I did not know that. I did not know I was a first. I didn't know that, you know, I was making history. I was just a hardworking young woman. And I saw the headlines, and I saw what this really meant for someone like me to be in that seat. There was no way to come in and to operate business as usual and to perpetuate the status quo. I had to bring in all those experiences of understanding what it felt like to be othered and not included and not centered in fashion magazines for my whole life and fix it. I had to be a part of the solution. And so I felt empowered to do that at Teen Vogue. And it wasn't just me. I think the important thing to remember is that change happens day by day, decision, story by story, decision by decision, hire by hire, you know, battle by battle, and over time change happens. And I think you have to take some risks sometimes, some big risks. And I felt like I had a team. I was able to hire folks who represented voices who had not been heard or centered in the fashion media landscape before. And I felt like we all came in with a mission and a determination to change the stories that were coming out of these places and celebrating diversity and beauty of all kinds and all shapes and all colors. And it was really central to my mission. You know, I had to embrace who I am, all the communities that haven't been centered before.
I just love that you weren't going to let another 3-year-old girl open a magazine without seeing herself.
I couldn't do it. And I think it just speaks to why we need more Black people, Black women, people of color, queer folks, trans folks in leadership roles, in decision-making positions. Because I always say the story, like, there's a lot of marketing and there's a lot of corporate communications that are, you know, virtue signaling right now, but the stories cannot authentically change until the storytellers change. And I think that we were at Teen Vogue, I think what we created was a case study for why it's important to not just change what your covers look like, not just change who's in your campaigns, not just change the talent that you hire. Those things are important, but they're one piece of this larger puzzle. And really the systemic racism is something that needs to be dismantled from its core. And white supremacy is, and we have to call it what it is. Like, there is a reason why white men are predominantly leading every industry you can name. And there's a reason so if we're conscious of that, we need to deconstruct that by being intentional about placing people of color, women, and Black women in particular into these roles, because that's how fundamental change happens.
Yes. No, 100%. You had straight white men on the boards of things that dealt with people of color or products that were geared towards women, and you barely saw women or people of color on those boards or in those seats of power.
Yeah. I mean, that happens everywhere, every day. It's unfortunately, I think that's why we've come to this point where we have to stand up and say, it's no longer business as usual. We have to take a hard look in the mirror as individuals, but also collectively in our communities and in our corporations. And, you know, I think I have the experience of being one of few, if not the only one who looks like me in the room and in my workplace, more than I'd like to. And I hope now that companies are going through this reckoning, that they're taking inventory of what their board seats look like and what their executive teams look like and what the complexion of their newsrooms are, because they are going to be held accountable. And it's
no 100. I read somewhere and I thought it was so fascinating. You and Aurora James have started this 15% pledge, where you're asking companies to basically give and not give, to allocate 15% of their shelf space to Black-owned businesses. I'm scared to ask, what percentage of shelf space is Black-owned business? Do I want to know?
I don't think you want to know, but I'm going to have to tell you, because we need to face the hard facts right now. We are finding that on average it changes between, you know, depending on the industry, but only 1-2%. And some places it's a lot less than that, are dedicated to Black businesses currently. And so this is one effort. The 15% pledge is, you know, our attempt, and this was founded by Aurora James, who's one of my best friends. She's a designer. And we had a conversation when all of these companies were coming out and making these statements that were, you know, they were saying they were standing with the Black community. And while, you know, it is groundbreaking that so many companies are coming out and saying Black Lives Matter and we stand in solidarity with the Black community, these things do matter, but without action and without accountability, it feels empty. Like empty statements that feel convenient. They feel like they're a relevance play. And so we sat together and we thought, what is it that companies can do that feels like a real commitment to making change? And at how can we hold them accountable, and what is it that we want from them? Like, this doesn't sit well. I think we can all say,
yes.
It doesn't feel real. It doesn't feel like enough. And so we thought, well, by the way, all of our white friends and colleagues were reaching out to us to say, well, what can we do? Asking us as if we have the solutions to the world's problems right now. I'm gonna pause because I feel like you need to blow off some steam about that point.
Okay, let me blow off some steam real quick. Because let me just explain to people what it feels like. So when this all happened, everybody went to their one or two black friends, and it was constant text messages. It was phone calls. What can I do? What should I do? Where should I donate? Da, 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 da. It is all great and it's nice, and I know it was coming from a place of love. But imagine on your birthday when you get 30 text messages and 50 phone calls and those Facebook messages, and you know that it's all from love, but then you feel overwhelmed that you have to answer all those questions and you have to email those people back. Imagine if that was your birthday for 3 weeks. That's what every black person is feeling like right now.
That's what and then imagine that it's not your birthday, but there's a funeral that you've attended each and every one of those days. So yes. The grief that you are experiencing is heavy, and the trauma that's coming up for you around this loss is real. And this is an added layer that a lot of our white friends cannot identify with. So it's triggering when we have all of our friends coming to us for a solution, when, by the way, there is no quick fix, unfortunately. That's the thing no one wants to say. It's the unpopular thing to say, because everyone wants a call to action. They want you to make it easy for them. And this is not going to be easy to resolve. It's not going to happen overnight. But Aurora and I thought, okay, well, what is the thing? If everyone's asking us, could there be at least one thing that we can say, everyone who reaches out to me, this is what you can do? And so she made the bold statement. She just went ahead and put on her Instagram, and she said, since everyone's asking me for a solution, I've sat with that question, and here is my answer.
Wow.
Take the 15% pledge, and let's together put pressure on the biggest, you know, the big box retailers in America, and demand that they dedicate 15% of their shelf space to black businesses. And we identified four primary targets, Whole Foods, Target, Shopbop, and Sephora. And if those four companies alone took the pledge, it would funnel more than $40 billion dollars back into the black community. This is how you make sustainable change possible. And this is how you address, you know, racial economic injustice in this country. And so this is one piece of the pie. Listen, this is one piece. We're taking on, we're tackling one piece of this, but it's an important piece. And I'm really, really proud to say that Sephora was the first major company of those four that stepped up and committed to taking this pledge, and there are a number of companies that are coming behind them. We're having great conversations with a lot of companies right now. They're taking this seriously, and I think this is a call to action that anyone who's listening right now can be a part of. You guys can put pressure on the retailers and the companies that you frequent, that you shop, and you can demand that they do better. You can ask them for transparency. Ask them what their number is currently. Ask them how many black businesses they partner with. The accountability comes when we demand for it. So everyone can be a part of taking this pledge and pushing brands to take this pledge. And our goal is to hit 1 million signatures on our petition. So I just would ask anyone who's listening, if you believe in this mission, you want to know how you can get involved, just go to 15%pledge.org and please sign the petition, post it on social media, and let's keep putting pressure on retailers to do the right thing.
First of all, I'm not only going to sign it, I have now become an ambassador. I don't know if you're not looking for ambassadors. I am now an ambassador for the 15% pledge. I'm going to go ahead and name myself ambassador.
Listen, We are looking for ambassadors, and you and I need to have a conversation offline. So I appreciate that. We need all of us in this, because we can't do it alone. We're so much stronger together than we are by ourselves. So I appreciate you.
Lane, I'm sorry. I'm literally doing this. I don't care if I don't meet the criteria. It's happening. I am now an ambassador for the 15% pledge, because it's crazy to me that I didn't even know that only 1% to 2% of shelf space in every, globally, is Black owned. When, and we're not asking for a lot. We're asking for 15%. Let's start off small.
Right.
Oh, but the fact that we could put $40 billion back into a community, back into the Black community, by asking for that from only four retailers. And it's crazy how much money Black Americans spend, how much consumerism we take up.
Oh, absolutely. We are an important, we are really important to the bottom line. And we know that across every industry. So it's time for companies to do more than capitalize off of our culture and our community. And it's really time for everyone to pitch in, to buy Black, to support the Black communities in a sustainable, long-term way.
Oh my God. Another thing that we talk about all the time, I'm going to call you offline on that 15%. But another thing that we talk about all the time is people thinking that their vote doesn't count, or it doesn't matter, or it's not going to make a difference. How important is it for young people, for all people, to vote?
I don't think it's ever, there's never been a more critical election cycle than the one that we're in now. And I think most of us know that when it comes to the presidential election, but I don't think that we have changed the culture or the consciousness enough for folks to really embrace the importance of our local elections.
Yes.
And we have a local election happening right here in Brooklyn, New York, tomorrow. And I will be out there. This is, you know, and I'll be honest, this is one of the first times I've paid so much attention, apart from the midterms, but where I've paid so much attention to my local government and just how much power there is in the local government, how much more you are affected by the who's in charge of your local government. And so I just want to, you know, encourage folks, make sure that you're registered to vote. Make sure that you are aware when the elections are happening, because it's not as easy as it should be to figure all of this stuff out. And that's by design. It's a result of voter suppression, which we're seeing happen rampantly in this country right now in 2020. So yeah, I mean, I have some figures here that I thought were really interesting.
You know, Elaine, you know I love a receipt.
Just figure, just throw some.
That's why I go to CBS.
So this is what I thought was really interesting and kind of grave. So in 2016. There were 100 million eligible voters in our country that did not vote. And just imagine how different our world would be right now if those folks knew how important their voice was at the ballot box. And like, just let that sink in for a minute. 100 million. And we knew that we knew how important it was. We had our first woman running for president. I mean, but we didn't get out there. We didn't get out there the way we should have. So we need to turn up. We need to turn up at the polls this time.
My initiative, somebody gave this to me in the comments. Thank you so much, Callie Good. Vote Cella this year. If we're not having Coachella, we will have Vote Cella.
That's it.
And you post your photos from
the box. I love that. I love that. Let's make that a thing. Is that a thing? Did I just?
We're now making it a thing.
Let's make that a thing. Like, that's the thing. We have to change the culture around voting. And that's up to us. That's up to us to do that. We have the most powerful tool at our disposal, which is social media. You know, when I think about the movements in the 60s, like Angela Davis and the Black Panthers, and they did not have this tool at their disposal. We have the power to mobilize, to galvanize our communities, our generation, and we really do, we have the power to shift the culture around voting, to make it something that isn't like if I feel like it, if I get around to it, or nah, it's a boring thing, it's a corny thing. this is something that we need to be proud of, that we need to, it needs to be a topic of conversation in our families and our friend groups. Like, it's on us to change the culture around voting and to change the course of history. And this is the election cycle where that's going to, where we're going to see, how much we actually do care about, you know, being a part of the change that we want to see in this country.
100%. And I often say this, just because, you know, you don't think nobody's watching, do it. That's when you do it. When nobody's watching, that's when you make the most change. And, you know, I often say, if you don't agree with your DA, if you don't like the people who are running your cities, how the hell are you going to make change? If you don't get out there and let them know what you need and what you want, voting on issues that you don't think are important, making sure you know your research behind the people that are running, because just because they're Democrat or Republican doesn't mean anything.
Right, right. We all have homework to do. We have a lot of homework to do.
Look, I pinned this 15%pledge.org down here because I want everybody to see that, to post that, sign that, make your friends sign it, because 15% ain't shit, but it can help a lot of people.
Absolutely. When we're dealing with 1% now, 15% can make a huge difference. And I just want to clarify, the reason it's called the 15% pledge, the reason that we're pushing for 15% is because right now, Black people nearly make up 15% of the population. It's a good place to start. When we're talking about equality, let's start with the percentage that represents our population in this country.
Elaine, you've given me so much to think about today.
I appreciate your passion. I appreciate your commitment to having these conversations on this platform. It is revolutionary. It does matter. And I'm just honored that you guys had me on. So thank you. And we're going to talk offline. We're going to have some conversations. I'm going to convert you. You're going to be one of our first ambassadors officially. We're going to talk to you offline about this.
No, we're going to talk about it. And also, Daily Pop, let's bring this 15% to TV. Let's talk about the 15% on E at 12:30. Let's have that conversation, because I think a lot of people are confused about what they can do. And signing this petition and pushing it to other people makes sense. It's easy. It's not any money. We don't need you to donate anything but your time and your commitment. And on top of that, you better get those Coachella tickets.
I love you. You're amazing.
I love you.
I love this Coachella thing.
I'm in.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me. I'm sending you so much love.
DM me so we can get this conversation started.
Okay. I will, for sure. All right. Have a great night.
Mwah.
Oh, bye.
Everybody, I am letting you know, 15%pledge.org, it is right down here. Make sure you go and sign that thing. Make sure you share that with people. Coachella is coming. I'm going to make it a thing. It is going down. I just want to thank all three women who came today and spoke their truth and were open and honest. A lot of things I didn't even know about Elaine, about Cynthia, who is my own friend, and Dr. Jackie, like, just amazing and wonderful examples of what human kindness is and how you can make change with one voice. Because I think a lot of times we don't think that we can change anything because our vote or our voice doesn't matter. And it really does. It really, really does. And again, as always, I want to say thank you to you guys, because we could have this conversation with ourselves until we're blue in the face, but it won't matter if no one is listening and you guys are here and you're open to listening. And I'm so proud to be a part of Amplifier Voices. This has been an unbelievable experience to sit and talk with unbelievable people in this industry who have something to say. And I just want to say thank you to the people who are urging companies and industries to change. This fight is not over. We need to keep this energy the way we have it. We need to keep this conversation going. And we need to continue to hold each other accountable. Thank you to everybody who posted, who has been an ally, who is not a person of color. I know a lot of times we forget to say thank you, but I'm throwing that to you right now. Thank you. And thank you to the haters and the trolls, because without you, we wouldn't know who was standing with us and who wasn't standing next to us. So, you know, we appreciate that. And hopefully I'll see you guys next week. If not, follow me at the Lady Sitter. I will be posting a bunch of stuff throughout the week. Follow Elaine, Cynthia, Dr. Jackie. They always have unbelievable things. Love you guys. I'm so happy about today.
And remember, watching Bravo isn't a guilty pleasure.
It's self-care.
Guys, let's keep the conversation going. We want to talk to you all week long. You can find us on Instagram at Bravo Daily Dish.
And on Twitter at Bravo TV. Just don't forget to use the hashtag Bravo Daily Dish.
Or reach out to us personally. I'm everywhere at Meg Segura.
And I'm everywhere at Eric J. Mack. That's E-R-I-K.
And if you're on Facebook, join the Daily Dish Facebook group.
You can post about what you're watching, your favorite shows, who's your favorite housewife, ask a question, start some drama. There's a lot of good stuff in there, so check it out.
You can also learn more about the podcast at bravotv.com.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Looking fine, and I got my girls with me. With the boys at the table getting tipsy. Miss me, kiss me one more time.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loro, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I love a good parasocial relationship with a celebrity who will probably never know my name.
I mean, honestly, who knows? Don't count yourself out. But my favorite part about these feuds is how they're ignited by the tiniest things.
Jada, I love you. G.I. Jane 2, can't wait to see it.
I accidentally laminated my brows too much.
It starts small and then it gets so big.
To be honest, Naomi, I'm fearful of you to this day.
I don't know her.
We all just have to admit, we're addicted. Everybody has opinions. Everyone picks sides.
Leave Britney Spears alone right now.
From Wondery, I'm Sydney Battle.
And I'm Matt Bellassai.
And this is Dis and Tell, la, 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 where we unpack why we get so invested in these feuds and whether or not our attention only makes the whole thing worse.
Follow Dis and Tell wherever you get your podcasts.